Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls all over the world, and I say that now because, yes, we are an international podcast. There's two people in Ghana that listen to us every week. This is the Game Dev Unchained podcast. I'm here with my co-host and best friend, Mr. Brandon Pham.
Hi, what's up, everybody? Welcome to this week's episode. Special guests, Maxime Boudouin and Julie, not going to even try your last name.
Hi, guys.
Welcome, welcome. How are y'all doing?
Good.
How
good.
Do you say your last name? Sorry, Julie.
You'll never be able to master it.
That's fair enough.
All right, no worries. You know what? Actually, let's just keep her identity a secret for her own protection. How about that?
All right.
That's a mystery.
Okay, so just in case you guys hear a little bit of hitching in the audio quality, our guests are actually in Quebec, and we are in California, so we are hoping that Skype can hold it together for long enough to get this podcast out, so we're going to roll right into it. Hey, sit down, Kat. Sorry, guys.
So, Maxime, so I came across your article this past week that went sort of viral.
Yeah.
So can you kind of talk about your background and what the article was and how everything went about it?
Yeah, actually, we thought of writing this article for quite some time now. I think we thought about it about a year ago. When we started working on Open Bar, we thought, well, as indie game developers, our biggest challenge is to actually get noticed. There's a lot of game developers out there who, especially on the App Store and Google Play Store. Mm-hmm.
There's like thousands of games every week being
released. Yeah. It's a nightmare. So we asked ourselves, what can we do to get noticed? And I had my history at Ubisoft. I worked there 10 years, and I've seen quite a lot of projects. So we thought, why not talk about it? So that's mostly it. I wrote the article, and it went instantly viral. So.
So just for the listener's sake, the article that he's referring to is What's It Like to Work on a Massive Ubisoft Game? And it was written by, I think, Jason Shire is how you pronounce his last name. It's on Kotaku right now. It's a great piece of writing, actually. It's almost nostalgic for myself because as I was reading it, I was like, yep.
I think of a lot of people...
It resonated with a lot of people working in the industry, and also it was a kind of a fresh point of view perspective on the work, also for all the other people who are very interested in the industry.
Yes,
exactly. And it also resonated with people who actually are working in totally different industries. I mean, big teams versus small teams. Mm-hmm. That's something. Everybody knows about whether you're in a small a startup or in a big AAA company or whatever. That's why it got so viral.
And before we get too far into it, can you give us just a little bit of your resume? So you worked at Ubisoft for 10 years. What specifically was your discipline, and I guess the two or three games that most recently you worked on for the audience?
Yeah, I started at Ubisoft in 2005. Back at the time, I was a graphics programmer. I work on a few little-known PSP titles, Open Season and Sub PSP. Then I moved on Prince of Persia, The Forgotten Sands on the Wii.
Okay.
On that game, I got a promotion as a technical lead. and then I work on Assassin's Creed 3 on the Wii U. Mm-hmm. Then after that, I work on two little projects that got canceled for different reasons, and then I was an architect on Assassin's Creed Syndicate.
All right. And yeah. Then you said, screw this, I'm going to do it myself.
Exactly.
Well, this is really cool. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Actually, when I started at Ubisoft, that was one of my goals. I wanted to be an architect, and then I did it. So there wasn't much to do at Ubisoft. So the timing was great. I met Julie about 2 years and a half ago, and the timing was perfect.
All right. Was she also working at Ubisoft as well? Is that why you bring it up?
No, no.
Okay, you're just saying.
I'll let her answer.
Oh, but when I met Maxime, I was so proud of what he was doing. I mean, it was glamorous and all, big shot architect working in a cool industry, and then he leaves.
I left like the year after. I don't want to do this anymore.
Well, the key is though that the gamers are getting the girls now just by being gamers. Like he's
yes, it's the way developers, I should say. The history.
yeah, it's finally it's our time.
and I think that it's hard to believe for some people. Because even friends of Maxim, when he told them he considered quitting to start his own company, mm-hmm. they had a hard time to understand why he would do such a thing. Mm. It's a great paying job, I think we can say that. And also, like I say, the glamour, all the girls also. why leave?
I think it's different in Canada for some reason. Claire and I are not getting that type of action over
no
here.
Way, man. Every time people are like, oh, Larry, what do you do? Like, it's a beautiful girl. I'm always like,
import, export.
Yeah, import, export, yeah.
I'm a electronic entertainment initializer. Like I'm trying my best to use other words to say I'm a video game developer.
It sounds great. An entertainment specialist.
Yeah, I'm an electronic experience liaison.
That's perfect.
I'm going to use that now.
Anything but video game.
Yeah. You sound good.
No, it's I don't know. I guess individuals in our industry, like, of course they want to know what you do and where you work. But I'm just saying, Maxim, you're a very lucky man, because every time I've used it on someone who hasn't been in industry, the first thing they say is like, oh, so you, like, play games a lot.
Yep.
Classic.
It's a thin line between gamer and game developer. So, like I mentioned before, your article that you wrote, your blog post went viral, why I quit my dream job at Ubisoft, and it hit a chord for good reason, right? A lot of AAA developers, although we've been in it and we kind of know that this was a problem, just being like kind of stuck at your job, it's still news to a lot of people. Like, not people still think working on AAA is glamorous and everything, but it's like it's people like you, Maxime, that it's finally coming out to tell it what it's really like, and it's a little different. And yeah. You mentioned before you had like certain goals going into industry, and it's very similar to I feel what every wannabe developers want to go in thinking that, oh, okay, I'll go in, I just want to make games. All right, I'm at the job making games. All right, I just want to be a little promoted to lead. And 5 years later, you're promoted. And it's like, all right. And you look behind, like, there's really nothing else going on back here.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, man. I mean, when exactly did you feel different?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I realized that when I worked on the two internal projects that I spoke about in my blog post. And I can't tell too much details about them because the information is still confidential. But those were two very small projects. The team, on the first project, we were six people. On the second one, we were only two. And I had so much fun on those projects. It really felt like making indie games, and I tested the Forbidden Fruit, like my colleague said, and once you've tasted that, you it's really hard to like start working on a big title like Syndicate with thousands of people at the peak. So yeah, I think that's what that's when I really considered seriously starting an indie business with Julie.
Because you felt like you were in an assembly line or something, and
yeah,
then
exactly.
You could be like yourself and two other people prototyping, playing.
Exactly.
It was so fresh.
And I think that if I had worked on Syndicate like in my first 5 years at Ubisoft, I would have really liked it. That was my dream. I wanted to work on a AAA game, but then the reality was very different from what I expected, and it was too late.
To enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I see junior people and they usually enjoy it a lot, much more than I guess.
I love how the fact that, you know, Larry and I are laughing about it because we've seen these youngins, and we see that they're smiling, and we like reminisce about how we used to feel.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're only like 5 years in, or 10 years in.
Yeah. I wish I'd still have that the same motivation to work on AAA projects, but I guess I just lost it.
Well, here's my question. I know that obviously from the viewpoint of writing the article, this is 10 years down the line and close to where you're ready to make your exit, or after you did make your exit.
Yeah.
I mean, there had to have been good experiences that you had as a AAA game developer, because there's people who listen to the podcast, I'm sure, who don't know either or, right? They haven't been on either side of the fence. So can you recall some, like, hey, you know what? AAA was good to me in these areas, you know? Were there anything?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, like I wrote in my blog post, at the beginning of Syndicate, I'm a tech programmer, so I like to do techs, especially in computer graphics. And at the very beginning of Syndicate, we worked closely with Unity. And they wanted a new special effects particle system technology for Unity.
Mm-hmm.
And on Syndicate, of course, we wanted that as well. So we collaborated with them. And we made something really cool with them. We were a small team working on that in Quebec. We were like five people or something. And we really made something great. Actually, it kind of went viral inside Ubisoft, and a lot of projects, when they saw what we made, they decided to integrate it in their own project.
Oh,
so
nice.
That was really, really cool. And I've worked also on Unity on other decks, and that was very fun. But that was before actually Syndicate started for real, and the machine turned on. So,
but what's the particle thing? Do you have a concrete example to?
Yeah, particle system is it's a tech that allows us to create almost all special effects in games. So when like you have a shooter and you shoot your gun, there's probably a muzzle flash and smoke that comes out of the gun.
Blood everywhere.
So all of this is usually done with particle system, smoke effects.
So you were mentioning your team, like on Assassin's Creed Syndicate. It went. It was like 1,000 people. You said.
I think that I don't have any confirmation on that number, so don't quote me on that. But right. It gets at the peak. It's around 1,000 people.
And that's just at your studio.
No, that's like all studios.
No, right? That's worldwide. In our studio, okay. I think we were about 350.
I was going to say, like, 1,000 for one studio was already huge, but even 350 for one studio is gargantuan.
It's gargantuan, I confirm. We were spread across 4 floors, I think. It's about 100 people per floor, so, yeah. And we're always running in the stairs between the floors, so...
I was going to say, that's when the company gets so big. Like, there's this funny story. Brandon was there. Sledgehammer was, we used to work together at Sledgehammer Games, and Sledgehammer started to, like, really get big. You know, we were in full production. And I remember this email went out saying, if someone doesn't work there, don't let them in, right? Because people are going to try to sneak in.
Yeah.
And so, now, I'm 6'5", and I'm one of, like, at the time, 3 African-Americans that worked there. There's only 3.
Yeah.
And I was walking in with Brandon, and we were right behind this engineer guy, right? And he was like a couple steps ahead of us, and he opened the door just wide enough for him to like sneak in with his shoulders and then let the door close behind him. And as I opened the door, I was like, dude, I work here too. And like I put in my badge. He was like, oh, I know, I recognized you, and then kept on walking.
Yes, the guy didn't think we worked there.
Not even close.
And he tried to play it off.
Oh, I recognize you. So yeah, when you get to 350 people, I imagine there's all kinds of like, don't recognize you, don't know you. I'm saying hello to you, and you've told me who you are 4 or 5 times.
Yeah,
exactly. That I really felt that at Ubisoft Quebec, because at the beginning of the studio we were 30, so everyone knew everybody, so that was super cool. But then at some point, I guess, it was rare that I actually met someone in the elevator that I knew. Most people that I encountered, I never spoke to. So it felt, I felt a kind of, I don't know how to say it, but it lost its human dimension, I'd say.
Gotcha. Well, actually, I have a question for Julie now, because I heard you say you started the company together with her. So, Julie, can you tell me about how you got involved in starting a video game development company? Is this your first? And if not, maybe some backstory on yourself.
Oh, yeah. Actually, when I met Maxime, I was not living in Quebec City. I was closer to Ottawa, the capital city.
Okay.
We met there, and then I decided to move with him shortly after.
All right, Maxime, way to go.
The glamour.
It didn't stop her, even if I made video games.
I wanted that bad. So, but I come from a family of entrepreneurs. Everyone in my family has a business. My father, uncle, grandfather. My grandfather had a bar, actually. It was pretty huge at one point. My uncle has a garage, and auto body garage. Mm-hmm. And my father is a managing consultant.
All right.
Oh, wow.
And I was always, when I was little, I always wanted to start a business myself, because everybody was doing it and they were doing fine. But I'm not good at doing anything, really. I'm good at managing stuff and telling other people what to do. But
it's funny how that works.
Per se, yes.
I shouldn't say that. That's messed up.
Oh, that's okay. So when I met Maxime and he had a real talent, I was interested in him.
And, well, that wasn't for me. No. It was just for what I could do with a computer.
It's an opportunity. I saw it as a business opportunity. No, we did not think about it for a year, and then he started to say that he was not so happy anymore at his job, and he always dreamt of doing that. And me, on my end, I I wanted to do that thing. I'm great in the finance. I do all the paperwork and the boring stuff so we can concentrate on the real shit.
And it sounds like you guys have the absolute perfect partnership then.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we realize each day.
Oh.
And so I studied in management, and also I have a degree in French literature.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a bit useless for a couple of years, mm-hmm. but actually our Prime Minister Justin Trudeau now has a literature degree also. So I think I could be Prime Minister in a way. Maybe I studied in the right field, but with that, I always wanted to do something creative. Also, I wrote a book. A book that wasn't published, and maybe if we have a project that's more ambitious, like the second project, maybe I could write something up there, like the scenario or something, so I could.
Yeah, exactly. That's the long term plan. We want to, how would you say that, use your,
channel all my powers.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to see what comes out of the partnership and more games from you. I'm really interested in your second game because I like your first game. By the way, we should probably just go ahead and say it, but Open Bar is available for download right now.
Yes, please go ahead and download it.
So Open Bar is your first attempt as a game design, as a game development team together, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, was it the very first project you worked on, or was this the one that was the most polished that you released? Like, were there other games that you decided to scrap, or is this literally your first shot already on the App Store?
This is literally our first shot.
Wow, okay, that's really good execution for your very first game, I must say.
Thanks.
But it did not look like that at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, right now I'm working on a blog post, which is the making of Open Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to put screenshots in there, and you're going to see how it looked like a year ago. And it wasn't so pretty as it is now.
Is the title of that blog going to be The Importance of Real Art versus Programmer Art?
That will be the bottom line.
The tagline. Oh, man. Yeah, I'm going to get your game. I want to play it. I like games like that.
Yeah, we were very inspired by games like Trees and Two Dots. I don't know if you played them, but we wanted to create a unique puzzle game, something very stylish, and we wanted the game to be kind of a bit more mature, not a childish game. We wanted to make a game for adults. So that's why there's no candies in there. It's more abstract and very stylish visual style.
Well, yeah. You got me hooked.
Well, Maxime, so you met Julie, and she helped you build this studio, helped develop this game. And this is while you were, well, before that, like, while you were at Ubisoft. I know there's a bunch of events that must have happened that led you there. But what was the last straw or the thing that made you finally decide to act on what you've been planning or feeling this whole time?
That's a good question. We actually thought about it for a few months because that's a big decision. And at some point when I went to work, I was constantly obsessed with this idea of starting an indie business. And it really was an obsession. I woke up in the morning, I thought about this, and I really wanted to do this. And I went like this for about 2 months before I said, well, enough is enough, and we decided to do it. So it's just like this idea that was stuck in my head, and actually that helped me get through the day at Ubisoft, like
the getting out part.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a
In
prison.
fact, it's like when someone is trying to quit smoking, the first moment you tell another person, yeah, I'm gonna do this, you're obligated in a way to do so. You have to do it. Everyone knows that you're gonna do it. So Maxim started to tell everybody he met, I'm doing this, I'm quitting, I'm starting my own company, and then he was stuck.
Yes, I couldn't go back anymore.
But I don't think there's a single event that he did not like get back from work and say that's it, I'm leaving. It's horrible. It's just that he was not feeling it.
Yes, exactly. It's more the accumulation of many, many small little things.
Right.
One big event.
So did you have a savings? Did you have funding? Or what was the financial side of things?
Actually, that's a funny story because before I met Julie, I was with this girl and we had a house together and for about 4 years. And when we got separated,
She left you?
she left me. Well, yeah, you could say it like this. Anyway, we sold the house and we actually made a kind of a great deal out of it. And
The market was pretty good for sellers.
yeah, exactly. And when we bought the house, we bought it from a seller that wanted to sell it very fast, so the price was very good.
The couple before they were separating also, so
Yeah,
that's a cursed house.
that's a cursed house. So anyway, that's where most of the financing on my part came from. But Judy too had a lot of savings, so
Yes, but it's more of a squirrel kind of thing going on.
Well,
It's not a big event.
that's great, man. I mean that's one of the biggest issues that people might have. Like, I would feel that most AAA developers would love to make that jump, but the number one thing is the finance. So, I
But
mean,
we
if
also made a lot of sacrifices, and I think many people aren't ready to do them. So, like, I had a car before, and we got rid of it, and then we moved into a smaller apartment.
It's a bigger but cheaper because it's not as nice as the other one.
Yeah, so we were downtown, and it was really great, but yeah, so.
And the cat is underfed now.
Underfed.
She's really skinny, so I guess.
No, he paints a darker reality than it is, but we downsized a lot of things, like just one car.
Guys, I stopped going at Starbucks.
Oh,
That's
man.
really hard.
It's like 20K right there per week.
Yes,
Yeah,
exactly.
exactly.
So, but now I did make him a budget. At some point, and I said, "Dude, you're like wasting $1,000 a year on your. Yeah, I can make you some at home." And it was the hardest part, I think,
Oh
for
yeah,
him.
it was the hardest part.
The hardest part was acting like your at-home coffee tasted just like the
That's
Starbucks
not too bad. That's not too bad.
coffee. No, I'm just kidding.
But no, I think many people they do not save money really because they enjoy themselves and so on. I think both Maxim and I were pretty different. We had a different strategy, like keeping money for like in. I don't know if you have that for your retraite.
401k.
Yeah, exactly. So saving money just for the heck of it, and then thinking it's a great idea to throw in all your savings on like a long shot. That's a weird recipe.
But I guess it's risky to invest our own money in that kind of project, but I think that I would really regret it if I, like, when I'm 65, 70, and I think back on my life and I realize that that I didn't even try to do that project of going indie, I would be very sad, I think. So now I'm doing it, and even if it costs me thousands of dollars, I don't care.
It's worth it. Living the dream.
Yeah, living the dream.
There you go. I'd rather be living the dream than living with only the dream, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's very well said.
Like that picture on your frame in your desk, like, oh, I would love to go to Hawaii. And every day you see that and you're just reminded that you're not in Hawaii.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Your next game, you know, you guys have told me off record that you're really excited about it. My question for you is, how far do you see yourselves going as a two-person team? Do you feel like maybe 10 years from now, you are going to be like a 30-person studio, 50-person studio? Or are you looking to kind of, you know, 10 people? Like, what's your goal for the company, I guess? Your
long-term goal? I'd say more in the 10 people range. Like I talked a lot in my blog post, I don't like so much big teams. For me, between 5 to 10 people is a real, it's a sweet spot. Well, at least that's what I think right now. Maybe in 5 years that will change, but for now that's the plan.
And we will get some people on board very, very slowly, smoothly, to make sure that everyone is a good match.
And there's always the possibility of outsourcing stuff. Like, I don't know if you guys saw Ori and the Blind Forest.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, and all the art was outsourced in that project. The core team, I think there wasn't a single artist on that team. So that's something we consider too.
It's hard to believe, though, because not working closely with your artist for the most part of the project is pretty alien, I think, but they did it so beautiful.
Yeah.
Right. You were kind of touching on this earlier. I'm hoping that you can expand it a bit. Besides not drinking Starbucks every day, comparing your happiness level, you know, just your life now compared to what it was at AAA, even though you had to cut back. Like, how has that been?
I'd say it's a bit like a roller coaster right now. Before it was like a calm sea, so every day was, I felt good about my day, but not especially, I was not especially super happy, neither super bad. It was just all right, I guess. But now being indie, I'd say some days I'm very anxious, very stressful, and other days I'm super happy, super sad. Like last week when my blog post went viral, I was so like it was a great success. So yeah, I think for me that's the biggest difference is some days are very hard while other ones are super great.
Right. But like you're living. Before it was less a steady pulse of no action, probably.
Yeah, exactly. It was just all days were the same, felt the same.
No growth, really, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think also working hard is everybody can do it, and it's great. You should because not working is I think it's boring. But working hard for yourself and not someone else, that's a huge thrill. You are really invested in what you're doing, even if you're like staying up late and talking to strangers. That's okay because the end result will be benefits you, not some other people.
Yeah, exactly. And one other big difference also is that now I work on all aspects of video game creation. So I did game design. I mostly never did game design at Ubisoft. And then I work very closely with our graphic designer and sound designer to nail down the visual part of the game, and then we went on marketing. So that's the first time of my life that I even read about marketing, and So that's one source of anxiety, I'd say. When you do something for the first time, it's not easy, but it's really rewarding as well.
It's not going to be perfect, but you'll have time to master the skills eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I'd say our goal with Open Bar was more about learning. And like Julie once said, it's like making pancakes. The first one isn't the most beautiful, but you have to make the first one, and then mm-hmm. the next ones will be way better. So that's...
It was
a training project. And if we make money with it, well, that's super cool.
Yeah, if you guys can make money with your first pancake, imagine when you're good at making pancakes,
right? Yeah, exactly. That's what we're thinking.
No, I truly believe that. Like, I always have that type of philosophy where if someone tells me it takes you 10 crappiness to get to awesome, then I will do my best to finish those 10 crappy things just to get out of the way to get closer to my ultimate goal.
Yes, exactly, exactly. That's it. That's our philosophy too. So that's one of the reasons we started with a mobile game, because it's you can actually make a great mobile game with a very small budget. While when you work whether it's on Steam or Xbox One, PS4, usually if you want to make a good quality game, it will cost a lot more. So
and you absolutely need outside financing for that.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. So so that was the plan for Open Bar.
And then if we have to borrow money or get the financing, as I was saying, we have always this project we can show to people. We are able to ship a game, we ship one, so please give us money to go on. That was the plan.
Yeah, I wish my career in application development was as good as yours looked, because Open Bar looks like a great game. I think you guys are going to find success with it.
Yeah, thanks. We hope so.
Yes, that's the plan.
We're coming.
I understand.
But go.
I was just going to say, no, I understand that you hope, but I'm telling you, I'm using my Swami powers. Open Bar is going to be a good game.
Excellent. Yeah.
But like Maxim was saying, stay tuned on his blog, because he will show... the world, what was the development of the project, and the first stages were so
so wrong, but I think it will make a great story. I think people want to know about this, I guess, the more secret side of making video games, like all the prototypes that you have to make that really do not look super good. Mm-hmm. And often they're not really fun, or they don't work for some reason. But I'm pretty sure it will make a great story. So
the first time I was testing the game, because I was always the first tester, I was playing it, I guess, 10 minutes with Maxim looking at me, and then we just fighted. It was so, so horrible. I felt stupid and ashamed that I wasn't able to solve the puzzles, and he kind of looked at me, was looking at me like, what you don't understand about this? It's so simple.
It's super simple. yeah, and at some point we stopped fighting, so we realized that we had something something great going on.
If I was able to play the game and not
rage quit.
Yes, it was a good game.
Yeah, exactly.
Did she ever just walk into the room from like clear across the other side and just like, how could you do this? Like, totally unrelated, just out of nowhere.
No, it wasn't that bad, but okay. there was a lot of negative emotions going on inside.
Well, let me ask you this. You've got to be a pro now, right? Like, it's your game. It's your baby. You've worked on it together. You know, you saw it from the start to the finish. I bet you look at other people sometimes who are like, oh, my God, don't you see? Just turn the plus and it's going to work.
All the time. Why aren't you doing this right?
And that's how you know you have an awesome game. Because in my eyes, if I can say this, you feel like you started as a novice, and now you look at it and you're like, how do you not see that this is the answer? You've completed the cycle.
Yeah.
Especially the first steps, we had a hard time to get to a tutorial that people were getting quickly, like learning quickly. Mm-hmm. It was frustrating because sometimes it was so clear for us what was
going on, what were the gameplay mechanics, but for mostly all our playtesters, they just didn't understand anything, and it was there was a lot of actually different gameplay mechanics to explain, and
it's simple, but I think we found the right way to explain them in the tutorial, so that now people can just learn.
Yeah, now the game is much simpler. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was speaking about the initial prototypes that we made a year ago.
Right.
So we simplify the game a lot. I guess that's a game design kind of noob error to to put a lot of complexity in the game to make it interesting. But we soon realized that the game has to be as simple as possible.
That's what we in America call first pancake problems.
Yes.
Nice.
Oh man, you guys are a lot of fun.
So, kind of going back to your blog post that went viral, was there a certain strategy that you went up? Did you think it would be that big, or did you take steps? Yeah.
Well, actually, I knew about Kotaku's history with Ubisoft, so I knew that if I wrote about my the reasons why I quit Ubisoft, especially as I work on Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which just came out, I knew they'd pick the story, and I have to admit that I actually wrote the article especially for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought they would publish a story and there would be a few comments, and that would have been mostly it, but I never expected it would go viral.
And the answer of the community, like, so many people are commenting and cheering, and it's so great to see that.
Yeah,
even the fans want you to have a nice, happy life, and that's comforting.
Yeah, a lot of people wrote us to just ask us, what can we do to help you? We want to get involved, and it's kind of awesome to, like, a week ago, we were, like, complete stranger on the indie scene. Nobody knew who we were. And
how to pronounce Gingier Studio.
Yeah, exactly. And 24 hours later, we were all over the place. That's really
amazing. That's a great start, man. The timing couldn't have been better. Yeah.
That's a great use of your position, especially given the timing. But I imagine it comes with a great sacrifice. Like, if you were to go to Ubisoft, I don't know, like, would they be like, oh, welcome back. Come work for us again.
I don't think they'd say welcome back.
That was a decision right there, yeah.
Yeah, but, well, I think if I'd go to Ubisoft, like, right now, they wouldn't be too happy about it. But, like everything, they'll forget about this, and come back in 2 or 3 years. I hope they'll they'll forgive me.
Well, you know, if anything, the article is out. I'm sure that they've seen it, and hopefully they can internalize some of the negatives that were said, and then hopefully it'll be better for some of the people behind you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But I have to say that they already knew those problems.
Yeah, keep drinking. Oh, yeah.
No, you can't say that, because look at what the EA Wives turned into, right? Like, that's a bigger version of what happened here.
Yeah. They don't outright tell you to crunch now. They say, we have lunch on Saturday. What do you like to eat? But, like, I think one of the reasons why, at least to me, it resonated with me is because, you know, the game industry is thriving, right? Everybody in the industry, from Apple to PlayStation to Xbox, everyone's benefiting. Even the people who play our games are, like, celebrities now, mm-hmm. are benefiting. But somehow the developer is still, like, the hobo of the game industry. Yeah. Like, we don't make as much as anybody else, but we made the game. We came up with it, and we're kind of treated very poorly in the type of position that we should be.
Yeah, I agree.
I do not agree with what you're saying from my perspective, because I'm not sure about the other companies. I don't know anyone who works at EA or something, but mm-hmm. Ubisoft has a great benefits. Mm-hmm. I think the majority of the people working there are very nicely treated compared to other...
Yeah, I have to say I don't have to... I don't have anything...
I think people are kind of happy there, and coming from other industries, I work in hydraulics, field technicians who work on site big plants fixing hydraulic units, and it's worse. you cannot imagine what they endure all day. So I think maybe it's not that bad, but I know what you're saying. There's huge profits coming out of it, and it's not maybe shared the way people want.
The way it should.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Ubisoft has a great retention rate, right? They're backed up by the government, and they are pretty much pretty good with hiring and retaining talent. And stuff yes. like that, yeah.
And they want to keep the employees. Maybe the other companies fire people when big projects are over. But I think Ubisoft keeps everyone.
They keep their employee mostly at all costs. Well, at least good employees, because it's like an investment for them. Mm-hmm. So they invested like 5 years in a. And a programmer to make him into a great asset. Technical lead, yeah, a great asset. So of course they want to keep them.
Yeah, that's good to hear. There's I like to hear that companies are investing in their employees, that they recognize that someone is talent, and you know they want to at least make sure that they can maintain that relationship, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's maybe the reason why there's a vicious circle, because if you have a huge team that you want to keep on the payroll, you have to make big games to use them all. So yeah. What happens is that, like Maxim said, the seniors, the senior employees, they maybe get fed up with doing the same games over and over again. But to keep everyone on board, there's not...
Yeah.
I mean, it's somehow, if there was a way that AAA could keep all the talent and still motivate innovation, right? And Maxime, you kind of were touching on this, like the whole factory worker feel. I mean, at some level, you have to be specialized in one thing for them to keep the assembly going, right? So.
Yeah.
I know it is a tough problem that hopefully, you know, maybe somehow AAA will balance to that in the near future, because it is kind of apparent to all companies across the industry where, you know, you might be really good at one thing and you're kind of expected to just do that one thing the whole time.
Yes.
In an industry full of sequels, you might be doing the same type of game with a different number behind it every time. And so that can be tiring as well.
Yeah. It's
It's like big Hollywood movies. Nobody wants to take any risks. Innovation is risk. We discovered that while making our own game, because we wasted, like Maxim said earlier, about 8 months just prototyping something that was fun. So if you risk to do some innovation, you might spend like 5 years working on something that you won't be able even to release. So I don't think the investors high up like that very much.
Yeah. Especially for big franchises like Assassin's Creed, which is an annual franchise. So Ubisoft don't have any choice. They must ship like one Assassin's Creed game a year, or they lose, I don't know how much, millions of dollars, but a lot. So that's kind of a vicious circle.
Well, I'm not going to ask you directly or anything, because I don't want to sour any relationships you have, but I will say this. I was very happy to see that Ubisoft pulled the internet and said, hey, how would you guys like a Pirates game that wasn't Assassin's Creed? I hope that somewhere in that company, that studio, that they're like taking that seriously and delivering a pirate game outside of the Assassin's Creed universe, because that would be awesome. I loved Black Flag.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved
it. I agree. That would be... Actually, that would be very refreshing and
and well received also by the community, I think.
Yeah, I'm
even if
sure.
It's not perfect, just the change will do greatly.
I think the Assassin's Creed franchise is getting a bit tired.
Mm.
We've seen it with the Syndicate. I hear they didn't sell as many copies as they would have liked. So,
I mean, it's been like 8 years since the first one, and there's been six of them.
Six. Well, one, two, three.
Black Flag Syndicate. Then there was like the Ezio stories on PS3.
Yeah.
Or, I forget how you pronounce his name, like the Brotherhood and all that.
A lot. There's been a lot. But, yeah. Go ahead, Julie.
Oh, no, I was...
Whatever.
Well, it's clear that we need to take a little break. Everyone, thank you for listening so far. We're going to take a break, play a commercial, and, of course, we're going to come right back with that beautiful chin music. Peace.
When you're a developer, creating an awesome game is what you do. But when it comes time to spread the word and get downloads, sometimes having an awesome game just isn't enough. That's where we come in. We're Black Shell Media, and our goal is to help your game become a success. We've been at it for more than a decade, and we've helped over 40 titles take off with distribution, marketing, PR, and partnership development support. If you've got an awesome game, we want to hear about it. Black Shell Media. Your fans are waiting.
And we're back. Over that 30-second commercial, Brandon and I flew to Quebec, and now we're all in the same house.
They still won't let us in.
Yeah, we're filming from his garage right now. That's as close as he'll let us get. Maxime and Julie, you guys still there?
Yes.
All right, so let's bring it home with 15 minutes of quality information, advice, tips, and suggestions for people who basically want to do what you do. So we're going to help you create competition for yourself. Is that cool?
Bring it on.
Oh, all right. So my first question for you guys is, knowing that you're from an engineering background, I imagine, you know, your likelihood of success for making your own game was probably a lot higher than, I guess, the average game developer who was not an engineer. But I will say this, even knowing that, did you still explore potentially working with Unity or Unreal or multiple engine options before you started your game? Like the consumer engine?
For me, it was... sorry?
Oh, no, go ahead.
For me, it was pretty obvious for the kind of game we wanted to make to use Unity.
Okay.
I already tried Unreal back when I was at Ubisoft, and while it's a great engine, it's really not appropriate for for the kind of the game we wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure. I actually, with you, I agree with you with the engineering. background, I'm not sure I have so much of an advantage over like an artist.
Okay.
Maybe even a designer.
Well, I would say this. If I wanted to quit and then I want to make my own game, I'm going to have to find a programmer.
Yeah.
So that's the advantage right there.
Yeah, we have to find an artist. And really, I obviously can do, I can create something beautiful by myself.
Yeah, apparently your blog is going to show us that in a couple of days.
Yeah, we have to say that what sells is beautiful graphics.
Okay.
Great programming doesn't sell.
No, sorry. At the end of the day, it must be beautiful or...
Yeah. But one great advantage is that I can prototype very, very quickly gameplay ideas and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's something I did a lot on WebBar.
Mm-hmm. To try as many things as possible.
You guys are inflating Brandon's ego over there.
You're welcome. Because a lot of the times, like, since Minecraft, right? So I always go back to this as, like, the designer and programmer champion for game development. And really, the program is the original game designer, right? The garage game developer is a programmer. He had an idea, and he made a game all by himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now we're kind of going back to that with mobile and indie development. Like, yeah, we're going back to garage development where it just takes a single person, really, if they really wanted to make a game, and usually with an engineering background.
Yes, so, yes, that's true. Actually, I guess it depends on the kind of game you want to make. Some types of game you have to put a lot of budget on graphics, while on other types of games... Like Minecraft, obviously the focus isn't about graphics, but yeah, but I don't think
it's a must, but
yeah,
it sure helps.
It sure helps.
It helps, yeah. I mean, pretty art always sells somehow.
So. But going in the. You don't have the a choice of generalizing your skills. So like on Open Bar, I did a lot of animation. Actually, we work with a graphic designer who he wasn't technical at all. So he made Photoshop mock-ups of what the game should look like, and he made the animations in After Effects. But then I integrated all that in Unity,
mm-hmm.
and I had a great time actually animating all those motion design animation, and I learned a lot.
Yeah, they're very nice, by the way.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm really proud of the final result. That's one of the advantages of going in these. Can touch so many aspects of video games. That's really cool.
But if you want to make things right, I would say if someone wants to start a project, you need three people actually. You need an artist, you need a programmer, and you need a business marketing type of person. And that combination can open all doors. Mm. But without one asset, it's much more difficult.
Yeah, I agree. That's the killer combination: an artist, a programmer, and business. And hopefully, someone in the team will be able to do game design and sound as well.
Because a programmer or an artist being also a business person is like a unicorn.
Yeah, definitely. But like, you kind of. Talking about it, when you finally did make the jump, like how much of it was looking for people in your black book of contacts, or was it you guys just scouring the internet for people to get in touch with you? And
yes, that's a very interesting question, because it was very hard, because I when we started the Jinjir, actually I was still employed by Ubisoft, and that's something that I did not talk about in my but I worked part-time at Ubisoft for 8 months before I finally quit. When we were searching for an artist, actually, I had a lot of contacts at Ubisoft, but I couldn't obviously ask any one of them to help me in my secret project. We had to search elsewhere. We started actually with a friend. He was located in Gatineau.
Near Ottawa. He's a comic book artist.
Oh, nice.
And that didn't work well for different reasons. One of them is just the distance. The other is he wasn't full-time on the project, and we had our initial vision with the project was very ambitious visually. Mm-hmm. And so for it to work, he should have been full-time on the team. So
That wasn't possible. So we searched back alleys, dark corners, trying to find someone. And it happens. It happened a bit by
luck.
Accident luck, yeah.
Yeah, so I just
went to lunch with someone he knew before, was working at another company, and she told Maxime, "Hey, I know this guy. He's pretty great at what he's doing. Visually, he's a graphic designer, artist." Yeah. And
I showed us an early prototype of the game, and I so she could see what we wanted the game to actually look like, and she just said that's the man of the situation. So it was great. We really liked working with him.
Yeah, you made the right choice. Your game looks beautiful. Your animations look fluid. It's gonna pop for a lot of people if they simply just even watch the YouTube video for it. So
yeah, I think so. When we showed the game at the IGDA last night, the answer was really cool. When I first cleared the puzzle, like, everyone was cheering at the animation. So
like children clapping their hands. Oh, look, that knife thing.
Oh, look, it moved.
That
so,
was great.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's another published example of successful programmer art, since you did the animations, right?
Yeah.
It exists.
It exists.
Every now and then, you guys get it right. I'll admit, every now and then.
Wait until you see the blog post about making up. You're going to laugh.
Okay.
And
so
when the artist saw where we were at, where we were... what we had for
yes, before he started on the project, he was laughing too, I think.
But politely telling us that we did something great, but he could avancer ça, comme il pouvait l'amener.
Yeah, he understood that why he should work on the project.
So it's a nice way of saying you need me.
Yes, exactly. But it was very polite and well said.
Oh, man. So, well, let's get to creating the competitors for yourselves. What can you say was probably the most difficult thing that you had to overcome that you now, being a sage and making your first pancake, you could say, look, guys, if you want to do what I'm doing now, making your own games, absolutely don't do this. What's the number one thing you could say?
That's for me, that's a classic, but I'd say staying don't speaking about your game early is probably the worst thing you can do. Mm. We started talking about Open Bar like a month ago, and while we started the project a year ago, and if we could go back in time, I think I'd actually publish my story at Ubisoft way earlier than that, and I'd try to get the community involved. I'd invest a lot more time about on marketing and community management, mm-hmm. and because that's the number one challenge for indie developers. That's actually not making games. That's just
getting noticed.
And
we met a couple of days ago another game developer here in Quebec City, and he was telling the same thing. The first game they did, the studio's name is cool, it's Chainsawsome. Mm-hmm. Chainsawsome. And the first game they did, they just thought, well, we'll make something super great and they'll come. We don't have to market it in any way. If you have a great product, you will have a huge success, and that's not how it works.
Yeah, your game won't sell by itself.
No, sadly, even if it's super cute and really fun, if people haven't heard of you, you will not be able to make it.
But I can understand why a lot of indie developers who start on their first project don't want to put a lot of time on marketing. It's just because we don't know nothing about it. For me, it was like a mysterious box that I was afraid to open. But then at the end of the project, like a month ago, I started working on it. So now it's not, I'm not as much afraid about marketing than I was, but I wish I started working on that way before.
Right. I mean, we know the challenges, or at least can imagine the challenges of going off on your own, quitting like a well-paid job to take all these huge risks, and pretty much it's an uphill battle until finally you make a hit viral blog post, and even then there's still more work afterwards. It's stressful, yeah, and exciting at the same time, because you kind of mentioned this before, where, you know, working for someone else and working for yourself completely changes the aspect of game development. You're taking on more roles, and you're seeing that every effort that you put in, there's a great output. Like, there's potentially to grow, instead of like maybe at a AAA job, you might do something amazing one day. Your salary doesn't really change or anything. You might get more work, actually, for working so fast. But it was nice that my question is, I guess, is like, yes, the number one thing, scary thing, is finally going off your own and then doing this idea that you've had for many months. But the second hardest thing is probably finding a like-minded individual to believe in your idea, at the same time give their time to support your idea as their own. Like, how much was that challenging, or were there times where you felt like giving up, or it was just more of practice?
No, I don't think we never felt that way. Maybe years in the future it will happen, but we're too early in the project to be discouraged, I guess.
Awesome. <I'm glad>.
We're still that's dreaming.
We're actually in the process of trying to bring an artist on the team for our second project.
Right.
And
that will be hard.
That will be a challenge because, I have to convince them that it's not such a big deal that they might think it is. just quit your job and let's do indie video games. And
do you have some savings? Yes, perfect.
We'll take them.
Throw them all away.
That's all right. Trust us.
That's exactly how much we need. All of it.
Yes.
And some more. You have a house, perfect.
We've got Square, so, you know, credit cards, that works. Just put in the thing on my iPhone and you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man.
But when you believe in your project, you will go at great ends to make it work, I think.
Yeah.
We're not afraid of that. And also, I don't know if this is the same thing in the United States, but in Canada, we have access to a couple of programs with the government. It's financing. It's not it's not free. They're not giving money away, but you can get some cash going to develop or to go in the production phase. So it's easier to take the risk.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
What are the terms to that that's different from a loan?
They become partners of the project, not partners of the company, but let's say they lend you like $100,000 and you put on the table the same sum, like $100,000 yourself. They become 50-50 partners in your project, so they get all the half of the profit after that.
Cool. Oh, wow. Yeah, we don't have that, I don't think.
No, and it's very cool, and it enables you to do projects that you wouldn't have done by yourself.
Yeah, we're very, very lucky in Canada, and especially in Quebec, because both in Quebec and Montreal, there's big communities in video games and a lot of support from the government. And I guess...
They see it like an investment and developing new technology. So if we are innovative enough, we can work with them to make new things.
That's amazing. Game Dev Chain in Canada now.
But it's cold.
Yes, you have to deal with the snow.
We've been dealing with the snow for all this time. We told you we're in your driveway. No, is it even snowing out there right now?
No, I think it's clear for now.
Okay. Yeah. Now would be a good time to visit.
Yeah.
Yeah, right now.
No. All right, well, we are past the 1 hour mark, and what that means is it's time for Brandon and I to stop asking our questions. I know, it's sad. But because you are such great, you know, interviewees, is that the word? Interviewees?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Cool. I'm going with it. Since you guys were such great interviewees, we will shut up and allow you to speak directly to the audience and just promote or tell them about something awesome that you're working on, something that you're excited about, or just how they can keep in touch, whatever you want. The floor is yours.
I was not prepared. We're Ginger Studio. We just finished our first game. It's called Open Bar. It's available now on the App Store. It's a fresh mobile puzzle game, very stylish and original. It's full of very slick animation and motion design stuff.
And a catchy tune.
I'm sure you'll love it. And do you want us...
Yes, please follow us on Facebook and Twitter, where we will be giving away free copies of the game.
We have promotional codes and we make contests, so you might win the game if you're lucky and if you participate in the contests.
And stay tuned on the Maxim blog post, because next week or maybe after that, he will post something new, cool, and exciting.
Yes, exactly. A cool blog post about the making of an indie game. I'm sure a lot of people will love to read this.
Well, let me ask you a question. Are Brandon and I disqualified because we know you guys now?
No, you're not. You can participate. Okay, cool.
I have no shame. You said free.
Please do.
Yeah. Okay. It's been an honor and a pleasure, and I'm really excited to seeing everything that comes from your studio. And thank you so much again for sitting down with us. This is awesome.
Yeah, thank you guys, man. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, thanks to you for inviting us. That was very great.
Yeah, for us also, that's been pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, your story is very inspirational, man. Thank you so much.
I'm glad you liked it.
And I guess that does it for me. I'm going to go play some Open Bar, because it's out today, right now.
Wait for me, Larry. I want to do it too.
You guys should make multiplayer Open Bar so that Brandon and I can see who's better.
A massive bar game.
All right, guys, have a great night, and thanks again for joining us on Game Dev Unchained, the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to stay in touch or continue to follow our developments, then you need to go to facebook.com/GameDevUnchained and drop a like and stay in touch. You can also get the direct feed for this podcast on soundcloud.com/GameDevUnchained.